And we're live.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Fans of Power, episode 122. I'm Tyler Baker. Joe Amato is here with me. And our good friend Nathan Kennedy is with us in spirit here. As we're recording this live, we've had some technical difficulties, and we're recording a lot later, and this episode will not be the usual hour and 20 minutes, hour and 30 minutes, 2 hours. It's going to be a short episode since we're getting started a little later, and our topics will not be as rich as we had intended them to be. We'll save those for next week. So we apologize for the delay for our YouTube followers and Podbean. It shouldn't make much too much of a difference. It just won't be as long to listen to on your car ride home or at work.
Yes, but, so we appreciate those that are live with us or watching or listening, and of course we'll listen later, but yeah, it's we're not popping up as usual because, you know, we of course do this, you know, through Doug Turner, but like Tyler said, there's a little technical difficulty, so we wanted to give you guys something. So Nathan was kind enough through the Beyond Retro channel to record for us, in case you're wondering, wait, what's going on? Has Fans of Power invaded Beyond Retro? Are we having our NWO moment, you know, invading WCW? It's like, you know, we're Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. Something's not right. We're still got, you know, the Masters Universe talk, but it's in a different platform for just today. So this could even be like 122.5, like the mystery episode, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, we're doing cross-promoting on this episode with our other podcast here. So we're just kind of conveniently saying, oh, it's technical difficulties here, trying to draw attention to the other podcast there. But no, just we had some issues there, and so that's why we'll just deliver as best we can here as we're recording. It's a lot later for us, and I got to be up at 5:30 in the morning. So I can't go the usual length at this time anyway. So I guess what we had planned to do, Joe, did you?
Hold on 1 second. I lost you, Tyler. I'll wait.
Okay. All right.
Now you're back. I got you. Now I got you.
We planned to do an Unsolved Mysteries. I was going to throw Joe the top three essentials to throw at him. And I didn't know if you had another spitball idea, you know, from...
Well, if it happens as it goes, but I mean, heck, we could do the Unsolved Mysteries of Masters of the Universe, Princess Power New Adventures, whatever the, you know, it's going to be chosen as, and then the top three essentials. I like that. And if something else comes, but yeah, this is, again, what's happening right now, people, just like always, we always do everything right there on the fly. Any topics, we might say, hey, we'll talk about this and this, but we still just flow with it. But then there's times like right now, Tyler just might have something he'll just say out of nowhere, or I'll do that to Tyler. And we like doing that. We like putting each other on the spot either way. So, yes, I look forward to what you're going to say right now. And if something else comes up, sure, we'll do that too.
Okay, well, my unsolved mystery in our series of unsolved mysteries is not really unsolved, but it's one of those things you almost feel like, kind of like the legend, like when you would watch Unsolved Mysteries and they would talk about Bigfoot or flying saucers, and you're kind of wondering about what you saw. Does this mean anything? Would it have been a big deal? Is it dangerous? Does it mean something, you know? And my unsolved mystery is Keldor. And I look at that simply based on the idea itself that, you know, it was an unsolved, well, not an unsolved, well, it technically was unsolved because we were never given the clear answer in the 80s.
The real answer, as I'd like to say, yeah.
Was, you know, released that it was intended to be Randor's brother. But it was one of those things, what would that have done for He-Man? Because in the 2000X series, we're shown, you know, Keldor, the connection is not necessarily made. It's all in, you know, people, you know, have implied with it behind the scenes stuff, but it's never really come to fruition in an actual storyline. And you feel like, well, had they decided to follow through with Keldor, would it have meant anything? And we've touched on that before, that we, not, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily like the idea. Some people love it. But me personally, had they actually followed through in the 80s and in 2000X with this storyline of Skeletor being He-Man's uncle, does it do anything for the series? Does it take the story of good and evil in a different direction? Does it do anything at all? Is it strictly a shock value episode or mini comic, and then it's one and done. I mean, does it mean anything? Is it significant? Does it hold any merit, this idea of evil being related to good?
Well, I mean, we've seen it, of course, in other properties with similar things of people finding out that this certain evil person is related to you, whether it's your father or whatever else. I'm sure we all know that no-brainer of the whole Darth Vader. But, I mean, could it work? I mean, it could have. It always makes me wonder, though, what would it have been like in the 80s? I'm always so intrigued about that more than anything. Because, like you said, the stuff that we got, as for in the MYP cartoon, you know, with Keldor being this blue-skinned warrior, half-brother to King Randor, as it was expanded upon, I guess, in some of the mini-comics, whatever it may be.
Things where I'll almost disregard that.
Yeah, because, again, my thought is, if we got it back in the 80s, I could almost guarantee you that if they would have finally showed who Keldor was and what he looked like, find out that that's, you know, I'm obviously King Randor's brother, and that turned into Skeletor, I don't think he would have been a half-brother. I guarantee you he would have been King Randor's full-blood brother, and I bet you he would not have been blue-skinned. He would have been the same tone as King Randor, but what would have been the story? What would have, you know, been the real expansion upon, you know, him turning to the dark arts of magic or whatever and getting corrupted on it and wanting to become the king? Like, maybe, again, he was his younger brother. And he hated that King Randor is the one that is king, and he wants to be king. And maybe that's what gave him this obsession on wanting to be in the dark magics. And, of course, then he becomes Skeletor. But I could picture him, obviously, being the same color as King Randor, then getting twisted through the dark arts to turn blue. Here comes the nasty skull, and now you have Skeletor. And then, like you said, what would have led to other stories, whether it's in the mini-comics? Of course, it would have been in the mini-comics, but what more could we have got? But I guarantee you wouldn't have been blue skin. This whole, like you said, let's have him be blue skin because Skeletor is blue skin. And hey, that'll be clever. And a half-brother. And now it's Gar race and everybody's related. It's like, it's too overcomplicated. They make things overcomplicated when trying to do these. And then it almost starts giving you this, I don't know, oh, do I have to pity this person? Oh, poor Keldor and what happened to him. I don't want to pity the evil villains. I want these villains to just be evil to be evil. And what was the decision that made Keldor originally turn evil if it would have happened back in the mini-comics? What would have turned him to just go so psychotic and want to become something else? And obviously, the intention of he became Skeletor, it makes you wonder, was that even something he was thinking? Was this a crazy side effect of a spell that turned him twisted? Things you'll never know, but makes you wonder what could have been, you know, like you said, an unsolved thing.
Yeah, and I, because when I had gotten a hold of the Search for Keller mini comic and then done research, you know, looking up that this was this idea that, and even before the interview with Lee Norling was printed, that he clarified that's the direction that we're going in, fans would speculate. And it just felt like, well, I would read them like, how do you get that? What is implied in this mini comic that directly says that, because I'm reading it word for word multiple times, there's nothing in there other than Skeletor saying they're too close and I need to stop this. Almost like he's just being a douchebag about this. Like he realizes they're looking for something. He doesn't want them to find out. And almost as if like, well, what's the harm in them knowing who you are? You know, if anything, that makes Skeletor's job easier because Randor's not going to attempt to kill him when he finds out it's his brother, you know, almost, you know, at least initially you think. But I just could not make the connection. Like what is it in this mini comic that people are getting that Skeletor is Keldor? I swear, and I never got the connection until I read that Lee Norling interview. And even then, yes, I pictured Keldor looking like, or Skeletor slash Keldor looking like a regular human being, a Caucasian, whatever the case may be, not a blue-skinned guy that, you know, if you're going to go in that direction, it would make sense that the portal or the whole point of those three towers, that the portals are open up only ever so often. The book's in front of me. I'm not going to bother to look for it right now. But that's when they search for Keldor. Obviously, you could see that as maybe a gateway that got him to Etheria in contact with Hordak to search for a higher power to bring back with him to overthrow his brother and claim the throne of Eternia for himself. Obviously, as we've seen in the Horde Golden Book, practicing these arts had a side effect and took away his what was a very odd-looking face to begin with and turned him into Skeletor. If we were going this direction and that the blue skin, everything, the skull face would be a side effect of practicing, you know, Hordak's black magic and evil sorcery, and he decides to come back, you know, and it's almost one of those things like he doesn't want people to know who he's become and rather keep it in secret and just, you know, he's evil, you know. But it's also one of those things too where I'm like, I don't like it. Just, I really didn't feel like that served much purpose, because then you're taking a lot of the spotlight off the battle between He-Man and Skeletor, and you're bringing King Randor into the mix and adding a layer that, you know what, it's not necessary to bring King Randor into this mix and now have this intense tie to those two when everything's been about He-Man and Skeletor fighting each other. And it just kind of felt like you're taking away this dynamic between He-Man and Skeletor, their constant ever-going feud that's never going to end. It's always going to be going, and now we need to make a trifecta because it's his brother. Like, why? It just doesn't come off as, you know, if it was He-Man's brother, and even that just feels like, come on, man, not everything's got to be Star Wars. But
I'll admit, when I was a kid, and, you know, of course, King Randor is looking for his brother, and like you said, this portal only opens very, you know, so often, and you see Skeletor knowing that he's in search for this. He's like, you know, I can't let this happen. It would destroy me, whatever. And the part where Skeletor is coming out of the portal, but, you know, Randor has that look of amazement, thinks it's his brother, but here comes Skeletor. I think they were, I mean, like, all the implying, even as a kid, I was starting to think, is somehow Skeletor, because Skeletor really does not want this to be found out for some kind of reason, but why? What would have been the secret if he would have known he became Skeletor? Would there have been some kind of, like, way maybe King Randor could have went to the sorcerers, or know a way of undoing what has happened? And maybe that was why Skeletor did not want this to be found, and maybe there could have been some crazy artifact. You don't know, but I was so intrigued. I think that's maybe possibly why I told you I just always looked at that comic so much. I mean, beyond the battles that are going on, and like I said, you're seeing King Randor getting down and fighting and getting, you know, into business just like all the other heroic warriors. Like when he takes this spear and throws it through Faker's chest, you're like, dang, check out King Randor. He just took out Faker. Sure, we'd never barely seen Faker in the damn mini comics, so he gets his appearance and he gets taken out by King Randor, out of all people. But I admit that it's an intriguing factor in storyline that, like you said, we never got the real one. All the stuff that came from MYP and the current mini comics, you know that stuff that wouldn't have happened back then. It's interesting. Like I said, it's still cool. I do like the character of Keldor in MYP, and I like the action figure of him as well, but okay, here's the thing. With certain characters like Jason Voorhees, for example, yes, I always bring him up as a horror character. I love Jason Voorhees. And then immediately from the beginning, when you hear about, you know, a boy drowning and, you know, the counselors aren't watching him, you automatically pity this poor individual. And then here comes part two, he becomes the killer. And then it just goes on to three, four, and keeps going on and on. But to think that this is somebody that he's a victim of, well, people not watching him and whatever kind of thing created him. Yes, it happened throughout the years. He became this unstoppable kind of being. So I love him, but the pity part was always there. That's the thing. I kind of pitied Jason. I felt like, you know what? He has an excuse for doing everything he does. But then you come to Michael Myers, it's like, okay, this sucker is just evil and we don't know why. And yes, in the later series, you see they explain why he's evil. But either way, at least for Michael, I felt like, okay, he's kind of always evil. And like Freddy Krueger, you're like, he's evil, but then they later said, oh, he was, you know, his mother was raped by 1,000 lunatics. And then you see him in part six being beaten by, you know, one of his stepfather or something. It's like, I don't want to pity Freddy Krueger. I don't want this. And so when it comes to Keldor slash Skeletor and thinking about Skeletor in general, sometimes I just want him to be evil to be evil. But I know they were trying to do some kind of story, like you said, of tying him, Keldor, Skeletor being the same person. And I don't know how that would have played out when we were kids, but I'm sure, I'm guaranteed I would have liked it. I can't think of anything in those mini comics that I absolutely hated story-wise. So I think if they would have came up with something, I think we would have just went right with the flow when we were kids. We're reading all the comics, we're buying the action figures. You know, it makes you wonder what things could have been. Because like I said, we don't know the real answer. We have the MYP stuff and classic stuff, and I do like the MYP stuff, but it does make you wonder, unsolved mystery, what could have been of the real Keldor slash Skeletor? What would he have looked like, and what would have those stories created in mini comics?
But it also, too, you don't know how far they were going to go with it because the next plan was bringing in Hera and the powers of Grayskull. So obviously the He-Man tournament would have continued, but how far would they have gone with it? Would it have just been something interesting in the comic, in the mini comics, since that's what Lee was in charge of? Just something in the mini comics, and that's really about it. You know, a one-off story in the next, you know, batch of comics at when in the 88 wave. Would we have gotten Keldor? Would we have gotten a character that's featured in a story that ties Search for Keldor and the Keldor character together and shows us what happened and how Keldor became Skeletor? Or what? You know, it may have just been a simple story and nothing more, or was it a big plot point to take the battle into a different direction? You know, not a drastic direction, but the storyline that drives the battle between good and evil, would it have done anything different? We'll never know, because it's almost like, you know, that would be something interesting to ask Lee. You know, maybe that's something we could try to get in touch with him about too. It's like, well, what would have been the extent of doing that, of making these characters related? Would it have just been for shock value for the kids and that's it? Or did you have something really, you know, some continuity, you know, to kind of, you know, flow through and weave through the other mini comics heading into 88 and even in 89. So, because 2000 never really dabbled in it. You know, we
I
just
bet
see.
they could have kept it. I think that if done in the vintage style, they probably would have kept it away to where we still probably, even finding out Keldor became Skeletor, I bet you they would have wrote it in a clever way enough to where you probably would have thought, damn, that Keldor is evil. Like, to where we wouldn't have pitied him, you know, like of what would have happened to turn
Yeah,
him into
I
Skeletor.
can't see the powers that be who wrote those mini comics make writing villains. That's a product of current writing today and what you see in the movies, where all the villains have got to be pitied and we have to sympathize and understand why they do what they do. Whereas back then, they weren't worried about trying to flesh out villains with layers for kids. It was more like we good and evil, that is it. And to me, that's what still works. It's not a product of, oh, I'm back in my day. It was, you know what? I'm 33 years old. I'm almost 34. I like my villains like that. I don't like layers to them. I like knowing that they were greedy, lustful for power, would cheat, do whatever it was. If you're going to show them as kids, show them as brats, because they wanted anything that their hearts desired, and they didn't care how they got it or who they hurt to get to it, because it was all about me. And if you're going to explain the backstory, you can't get any more simpler and roots of evil than that, you
Pretty
know.
much, he would have just probably been jealous of King Randor, and
Could not, you
yeah,
know.
just he would have probably been jealous of King Randor and him being king or having the throne before him. He probably would have been power hungry, dabbled in the dark arts, got twisted, turned even more evil into Skeletor. And I bet you they could have left it at that, and there was no way you'd probably still pity like all poor Skeletor or Keldor. They probably would have kept them both pretty evil in that sense, I guess. But no, it was a good Yeah, well, that was a good discussion on Keldor. I like that you brought that up, because it's just things that make you think. Because everybody in the chat room, like,
But it's so how's that an unsolved mystery? I'm like, well, because we never got to see it play out in 2000X or in the original line. So to me, that's an unsolved mystery of what the impact of that character would have been.
yeah, no, it is. It's true. And I just want to say to Adam Freeman, Christopher Dahlberg, Chris Simpson, Zentron, JSP, Jeff Prime. And I think I just got everybody. I thank you all for joining us in the chat room, because they're going back and forth too on their thoughts on Keldor slash Skeletor. So, no, appreciate you guys being here. Like I said, this is going to be kind of a quickie episode, so it's not as long as normal. That's why I might not have got to everything you guys were saying, but I will try to get some, especially towards the end. If you guys have, you know, a couple questions you want to shoot us about anything of the mini comic cartoon toys, when we get to that part, you guys can be free to do that, and we'll definitely answer it. But you know, it's like I said, since we started late, it's kind of a quickie. But well, we'll move on from that. Now, you have some essentials. I don't know what you mean and to what regard, but I guess I'm gonna find out right here in a second.
Yes, as we did last week, and like I said, this is just a segment to encourage people to find the best of the best when it comes to certain characters in the mythology. And it would be, I tried to pick someone that would not be cliche, but also like made you think, like, what are the best stories of this character? And I'm asking Joe Amato to pick the top three essential stories for Cobra Khan.
Oh, wow. Now you did absolutely put me on the spot, because...
And I encourage listeners to this, like, what are the top three Cobra Khan stories that best represent the essence of that character, that live up to the name Cobra Khan?
God, see, this is one where I probably, in my head, since I don't know all the Filmations very, very well, like I said, I definitely don't have the steel trap memory like you do, Tyler, of every Filmation episode where he appeared in, because I know there was multiple ones, and like his team ups with, like, was he with Webstor quite often, or no?
There was three episodes that him and Webstor featured together. One where they're prominently a tag team, and the others where they're working together, you know, along with Skeletor or with Evil Lyn.
Okay, because, like, obviously my first one that comes to mind, don't know the episode, but it's an MYP episode. It's the one where he does make his appearance, where he breaks out of that prison with that little step creature of his to help him get out. And then he, of course, goes to the void with, you know, that artifact to try to release, you know, all the Snake Men, which he doesn't get them all. I think General Ratlore came out, and...
variety of snake warriors that got out.
So I know at least he got him out, but it's memorable just to see the cunning that he does, because you know he's going to eventually be playing all the sides, from Skeletor to eventually King Hiss. You can see the cunningness of him already in that first episode. I mean, that's an essential for me, but as for the Filmation ones, I don't have them locked down in my head.
It doesn't have to be Filmation. Like I said, it can be mini comics, storybooks, various incarnations of the character in magazines or whatever. The top three that you just can remember, that you know when you think
the MYP immediately comes to mind. What's sad about mini comics, a thing that comes to mind, but I don't know, it didn't seem like it's an essential. And it's not, no, it's not an essential. It's like, oh God, I remember Cobra Khan, where I think he accidentally, I don't know if it was him that ingested the hot barbecue sauce or something from Rio Blast. But it's like, you got me, Tyler. I can't think of two other essential things that basically say this is Cobra Khan and this is why you should know Cobra Khan. Because now that's when it comes to me of being scattered memories from the cartoon to the mini comics. I know you probably offhand definitely know some good highlights of him, but I'm going to be honest. No, I can't off the top of my head. And hopefully when you say yours, maybe I'll remember it, but it's possible I might not. So I only had one. That's sad, but I only had one.
Well, since Joe has mentioned Snake Pit, and, you know, granted, I'm more of a Filmation butt, people who are butt, nut, jeez. I'm more of a Filmation. Yeah, I guess I am a butt, because I kind of downgraded anything else other than Filmation for a lot of times. But Disappearing Dragons, which was Cobra Khan's first appearance in Filmation, I think that depicted him in a very serious and, capitalizing, what Jerry said, a very cunning manner, because they're not working with Skeletor, they're working on their own, supplying dragons for, lack of a better phrase, cockfighting. to allow the Darmy to bet on animal cruelty. And they're doing it for the means to conquer Eternia. So when you're introduced to Cobra Khan, he's introduced as a very serious character who doesn't like bantering with Webstor, but they're working together for a common cause that only supports them. And it's still to this day is my favorite incarnation of Cobra Khan is from that particular episode.
Okay.
Followed by Meteor Monsters.
Oh yeah. Okay, I forgot that, because I mean that's a cool cover too. But yeah, go ahead.
Cover, and he's given, you know, you're seeing Cobra Khan control snakes, like he controls this giant snake to attack He-Man. The artwork looks good. You know, he's working with Beast Man, but he's still portrayed as a very competent, serious villain. And for the most part, too, Cobra Khan in all of his incarnations that I have seen, he's never been victim to fall to silliness. Even in later episodes of Filmation, if he's featured in the group, he's the only one that's not He's almost guaranteed never to be portrayed in a silly manner. I mean, even from Journey to Stone City to The Secret of Grayskull, where you got Clawful and Trapjaw kind of being portrayed as kind of oafish to a certain extent. Cobra Khan is with Skeletor working together in Grayskull, and you've got Cobra Khan and Web Store and Evil-Lyn and Journey to Stone City. He's always in the Cold Zone. Not a good episode, but he is working on his own. He's looking to portray his people, the Reptons, he's just always portrayed as a very serious villain.
Yeah, and that's,
And
I hate that. I hate that I forget the Golden Books. And we discussed those a lot. And there's some I do know really well, but those little soft covers, right when you said it, like you said, you immediately, I remember the cover, and He-Man struggling with that snake, and you see Cobra Khan in the background, which I always love those painted covers, because it made not only the heroes, but of course the villains look even more intense and evil. But yeah, because there's, I think that small snake is on the cover, but of course the snake that he controls is.
big, big snake.
Yeah, in the book, because everybody remembers whatever you've seen on the cover, that type of art was not in the actual book itself, but also things would change. So it wasn't the small snake, it was this gigantic one, which I even thought, I think, got the Wind Raider or something. I thought it was so big.
Pull the Wind Raider with its mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So that is, it's a time, you're right. I guess that is a time for Cobra Khan to shine. And hell, maybe we can even talk about that book next week. But no, I
have
mean,
already done
oh, we
that.
have. Oh, God, maybe. Oh, Jesus. See, there you go. So, but no, it's,
Wrap
I
up
guess.
this one. I recommend The Rock People mini comic because, again, we go back to Webster and Cobra Khan, and Cobra Khan did get a few mini comic appearances, but I feel like this one actually comes off as less comical. It's more like they're being portrayed as, even though they do get beat. I like his in Double-Edged Sword. He's given one, I think, two panels, and that's it. And that mini comic was packaged with him, but he's given two panels and never seen again. I'd like
It's
to ask Larry about that if he knew anything about that, but
no, it's funny, like you said, that they're Cobra Khan and Web Store from the cartoon, Filmation into some of the comics, that they're kind of always depicted with each other and teaming together. And I think that maybe it was a little nod to the old times, but when MYP had Snakebit and you seen Cobra Khan appear for the first time, you also seen hiding up in, the dark caverns, Webstore made an appearance, but it was only just him looking down and peering. So I thought that was interesting. Like, hey, they're together in an episode, but it's not like you think. And of course, they never teamed up because, well,
yeah,
as you, yeah, we know what happens.
unfortunately, and I would love to think that if a new comic book or new canon of some kind came along, that Cobra Khan is someone you can picture working on his own. But if he's got someone with him, it's always going to be Web Store, like his equivalent of his drinking buddy. If he's going to work with somebody, he trusts Web Store, and Web Store trusts him. They're both evil as hell. But you will always see them working together if Cobra Khan has got someone with him. Because to me, Cobra Khan is an evil warrior, a spy for Skeletor. He's not a snake man. He's master of the snakes, but he's got the insignia. But I do not consider him a member of the snake man. He is, and will always be, one of Skeletor's most prominent warriors, always teaming with Web Store. Because they're on my shelf, and they've been like that since I've had the classics. They're up here on my classic of a vintage shelf. I've always got those guys together, and all because of Disappearing Dragons, because I love that episode. We'll do a commentary for that at some point, because I can't wait to discuss that episode at great length,
There.
or even an actual discussion. But those are the three essential Cobra Con stories, and I encourage our listeners to come up with their three essential Cobra Con stories.
That'd be no. Hey, yeah, we'll have to have them do that. Christopher, excuse me, Christopher Dahlberg just said Cobra Khan is the Starscream of the Snake Men.
Yeah,
Maybe.
because I could see him. I mean, he's there to portray the Snake Man. He's there, pretending to be an ally, when no, he's just going to help overthrow him too. So yes, he is
Exactly. Yeah.
the
I like
Snake.
that. I like that. That's pretty cool. So, thanks for that. But, well, I guess those are two of the main topics. I mean, I'll pass it to you guys in the chat room. If you have any questions for anything from the comics, again, cartoon toys that you want to ask us, and it's not just pertaining to stuff we've just said now, but anything you want to ask, go ahead, ask the questions now. We'll answer them. Well, of course, we'll give your name and shout out and during the show. I mean, well, of course, we're gonna do it. We'll just say who said what, and we'll try to answer your questions. But no, this was again, this was kind of an impromptu episode because our technical difficulties. We weren't quite sure if we were gonna record, but like I said, Nathan was kind enough to do it. So this one's a little bit late. So if you have questions, we'll definitely answer. But I was trying to think, as for anything topical, Tyler, I don't think anything as for things happening now in the world or news for
Will,
He-Man.
I saw this the other day. Those douchebags at Comic Book Resources put together a list of the 15 most inappropriate moments in the He-Man cartoon. And I did not bother to read what those idiots put together, but their clickbait suggested He-Man coming after Starchild, a shot of Teela's ass, and what's her name from A Friend in Need holding something that makes it look like she's holding a joint, which
Yeah,
the episode
so
is about drug addiction. But
there
I just,
was,
God, I
yeah.
hate those pricks on that. Sorry, kids. Sorry, people with my language. I just that's t things like that that piss me off. And I was going to bring that up to Joe that those morons decided to put together another list, demeaning
Yeah,
the
because, yeah.
so funny and cool and hip with our slamming of 80s popular culture.
Yeah, there was another site that did something about that just recently, too, with other properties, and it was annoying, but. Yeah, that is always annoying. Okay, well, real quick, okay, in the chat room, Adam Freeman said, "How do you feel about Mark Taylor recently confirming Wonder Bread is legit?" Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think we've all known pretty much, everybody has known it's been confirmed. Yes, it's a real figure, but we still don't have the origin confirmed. That was the big thing that everybody's still been wanting to know is, was it Wonder Bread? But as we know, it wasn't Wonder Bread who put out the figure. It's a real figure, but it's still wondering, was this just an item given out at certain stores in certain regions throughout the United States? Was it a different kind of mail away? That's the still the thing everybody has been wondering, which we still have not got an official answer. And you know what? We probably never will, and I kind of like that. I mean, like I said, it was probably just a random giveaway at a store when they were promoting Masters of the Universe, and they had this excess stock of a brown hair with black details for He-Man that they couldn't sell in package. So that was their way of getting rid of it. It was like, here you go, way of promoting. Get this new toy line. Get this new toy line. So it's yeah. Well, at least yeah, that was my answer for that. We still have never got a official confirmation of where it came from. So one day maybe, maybe not. Okay, Zentron said, oh, so, okay, this ain't for you, Tyler, because the Zentron picking on me. Here, Joe, try to guess this easy movie quote. Dead or alive, you're coming with me. Okay, yes, I do know RoboCop. I can at least get the simple ones, but when it comes
It wouldn't be surprising if you're like, is that Friday the 13th, part 6?
it's like, what, did Jason talk in that one? Oh, trust me, Zentron, at the end of this episode, Tyler's going to say something, and it's going to go, phew, right over my head. So let me see. Adam, I'm just checking to see if there was any. Okay, Christopher Dahlberg, and I'll pass this one to you, Tyler. Says Joe and Tyler, have you read Matt Kaiser's Keldor Chronicles trilogy? His weaving the entire canon into a beautiful tapestry, connecting many dots, and the way he ended it was awesome. I'll pass it to you, Tyler. I don't know if you've read any of that from Matt Kaiser.
No, I can't say that I've even heard of the guy. I really haven't delved into fan fiction much. I did a little bit in the early 2000s with a lot of the early He-Man websites. I would read some people's fan fiction, which I just to kind of get my fix about anything He-Man related. But I never heard of it, and I don't know if I would give it a fair shot because I've never been too keen on the whole Keldor thing anyway. Because I like my Skeletor from Infinita, but obviously it's well known with fans because I guess people have read it and supported it, and more power to him and the people who thought it was a pretty cool storyline that he weaved together trying to connect all the dots of the universe. So I think that's what I do love about it. People putting their own ideas together and trying to.
No, it is. No, that is what's great because I've read the first one, Christopher, but I still haven't got to the other two, which I will. But I'm sure, we can always link and I can link something to Tyler as well. But no, that's what's great again about the community. We've always said is when fans can keep things alive, when there's no any official cartoons or comics or movies or anything, and you have fans doing this stuff that is still keeping the interest and Masters of the Universe live. I mean, that's fantastic. Hell, even if there is current cartoons or comics, still just people showing their love and passion for this property and building upon, like you said, things that they really liked and maybe want to show stuff and weave things together. I love that. I mean, it's fans, like I said, showing their love for this passion, this property that's been around for over 30 some years that we still continue to talk about. I mean, that's what we do on this show. We're just still keeping it alive, talking about things from the past, things from the present, things we'd love to see in the future. So it's fans like that, yeah, that definitely keep this property alive, and I love that. Definitely love that. But okay, well, those are basically the questions from everybody in the chat room, and we do appreciate that because, like I said, this was a short one. It was a quickie. So before we wrap it up, I guess I'll pass it to you, Tyler, if you had any closing remarks, and I can't wait to get stumped at your quote at the end of the show, but go ahead.
Not to spoil too much, do you want to announce who we got coming next month?
We have two guests that I was speaking with probably 8 months ago, one of the particular guests, and this guest seemed, I can't remember if it was through one of my customs, but I was trying to, of course, like, you know how crazy I am, like, you know, when I seen Sky High on the William George poster, and I called them that when I was a kid and made posts about it and just tried to spread it like a virus through the He-Man community. And what happened? That was the official name for Sky High for the Classics figure. Well, there's another character I obsessed on, and that's the robot slash spacesuit of Castle Grayskull. Again, it was never really confirmed. Was this a robot? Is this a spacesuit? I mean, what in God's name is this thing inside the interior of the Castle Grayskull playset from the 80s? Well, like I said, it was over 8 months ago. Rebecca Taylor, who I was speaking with, said she drew that along with many other things, and she also told me what was the intention of that spacesuit. So, along with her, Mark Taylor will be on Fans of Power, and they'll be on here to talk. You know how you Tyler and I will start rambling on questions. We're going to be hitting them with so many different things to really just pick their brain and bring out so many things that you maybe have never heard before. Especially, like I said, this. Well, she confirmed obviously to me, but then she did later through a recent interview on a on Masters of the Universe Evolution page. She confirmed that it was a spacesuit. But with me 8 months ago, she said, "What is what's behind this spacesuit?" I just found it fascinating. But it's gonna be so great to pick Mark's brain and just let him go. We're gonna let him go. You know, he's gonna go crazy with what he has to say, and of course, what we have to ask. And of course, people in the chat room, you can feel free when we have that episode to shoot and pick their brains too. But me and Tyler, you know how we go nuts, and we'll probably hit them with, I'm sure, the questions that have been asked before that maybe some fans have never heard the answers to, but also a lot more. So we'll dig into that, and that'll be April 8th. That's our version of WrestleMania. It's Mastermania. So while WrestleMania weekend is going on, we're going to have our version of Mania for Masters of the Universe.
And later on that month, Larry Houston has agreed to come back to join us, and on April 22nd, to dig back into his work on the mini comics, and particularly Joe and I will really focus on Clash of Arms, and ask him some more details about that particular mini comic. We'll ask him about Lodar and Geldor being put into figure form, which I think we touched on, and that Geldor had been turned into figure last time we talked to him, but we'll ask him, a lot more about the mini comics, because the audio on that first interview was not the best. So we may ask him a few of the same questions again, but really focus a lot on Clash of Arms, because we figured, well, hey, what better way to go back and revisit it than the guy who drew it himself? So,
Yes, that will be fantastic to have him on again. And oh, yes, Adam, in the chat room. Oh yeah, she told me, like I said, this was over 8 months ago. She told me about this spacesuit and more about the spacesuit. So yes, that'll be discussed along with other things that you might not have heard everywhere. So we'll see how that goes. But yes, when Larry comes on, oh man, that's gonna be a blast. I mean, the person that is responsible for working and drawing more of the vintage mini comic or excuse me, comics than any of the artists. Because some people always thought it was Alcala, some people even thought it was Mark Texera, but no, Larry Houston, he drew more of the vintage mini Master Universe mini comics than any of the artists, and he's responsible for some of the most original characters that we love. Like you said, we got Lodar, Geldor, you got Prince Dakon, you have a lot of those other creatures and things that were in his comics that he brought such a vast array of, you know, like his version of Garn. But he has such a an eye for unique, different characters. And I think that's what caught our eyes as children. So, I mean, hell, look, we got some figures, and I'm sure we'll be getting more of his figures eventually in action figure form. I sure hope so.
Yeah, I hope we get a Prince Deacon down the pipeline. And also, people, too, this is a guy who directed the 1990s X-Men animated series. He worked on the G.I. Joe animated movie, like doing the animated sequences. He's worked at Filmation. He's worked on various cartoons for Marvel in the 80s.
Did he have anything to do with that X-Men arcade game? Did he have anything to do with
No,
that?
but I asked him about that, and because the designs in that arcade game were based on the Pride of the X-Men pilot, which he directed as well. But no, he didn't. He was well aware of the game, in that I guess Konami just took the designs that were used from Pride of the X-Men, because that's how Juggernaut, White Queen, Magneto, Kitty Pride, all the X-Men all resemble what we see in the video game, which just kind of makes you think if we'd seen Nimrod and Wendigo, that's how they would have looked almost. But they were based on the cartoons designs. But he had nothing to do with it, but he was very well aware of that, and that a toy line was supposed to have been made based on Pride of the X-Men had the series been picked up. But he has talked about that. If you're interested in that, we did a spinoff interview with Larry called Fans of Mutant Power. That's on YouTube as well. That's all about his work on the X-Men and some of his other animated series. And if you guys want to ask him some X-Men questions, well, I'm sure we'll be more than happy to allow that as well, because we wanted to do more with him about that at some other point. But he'll be coming back to talk about Clash of Arms and his work on He-Man, and we'll try to make room for a little extra excitement on the podcast as well.
Okay. All right. That will be fantastic. I was going to say, one quick question I'm going to cover before we wrap it up. Zentron in the chat room said, did you ever buy Adora being under a spell in the cartoon? And I believe he's, of course, referring to the one that Shadow Weaver put over. Yes, I do. The thing that worked with her, which even made it more intriguing that she could be under this spell that Shadow Weaver maybe at times had to do again, you know, to make sure she really stays under it. But, I mean, it shows the power of, obviously, Shadow Weaver and what she can do to manipulate a mind. But it shows, obviously, the power of Grayskull within the good when she becomes, you know, She-Ra for the first time. And definitely to make sure, probably, hopefully, that spell never would come back. It just shows that, it would probably take the power of Grayskull to snap that spell that Shadow Weaver has put over her so many years. But I could see that. I mean, I know you'd think, hey, you know, couldn't she see that they're doing evil the whole time? But I mean, I guess if that's how you grew up and this is where you've always been, maybe you would just see it as that's how things are, since she's not really outside of the Fright Zone and seeing what's really, really going on. She probably figures that's just how it is. That's her life.
Well, it's even mentioned in Secret of the Sword, like, you know, He-Man tells her, you know, haven't you seen, you know, what goes on at the Fright Zone? She goes, no, I spend most of my time inside the Fright Zone, you know, training and things. So,
yeah.
Even though when we're introduced to her in Thamor, I think it's the name of the town, she's there running the show and sees it as these, you know, rebels or tax evaders and putting people in horde slave transports. You know, it's part of the good of the horde. So it's when you're taking an infant and you're raising her from infancy and your ways of thinking. I mean, she's 18 years old. It's going to be hard for her to think otherwise, that what Hordak and the Horde are doing is wrong, you know. So,
right,
it probably wouldn't be too hard for the or wouldn't be easy for that spell to break until someone is finally coming along and challenging her way of thinking, a la He-Man, you know. So,
that's a good question. I like that question. That was a good question.
We'll cover Secret of the Sword at some point as well, either in parts or the whole thing. Hell, I don't know, but that will be something we will do at some point.
Most definitely. So, all right. Well, again, appreciate every one of you guys being here in the chat room, you know, joining us. And I know it was a quick little last minute and a twist and a change, but hey, you showed up and we really do appreciate it. We love having you here every single week. And yeah, next week we should be right back on track. So I'm just going to say what I always say. I'm going to tell you to go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
And check out He-Man.org, Joe Modest Customs, Axel's artwork, Kevin Sharp's artwork. Closing it out here. What do you want? My face on the $1 bill.